It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The birth of Social Security preceded by about a decade the beginnings of the baby boom generation. But now those two ideas are colliding, and more and more and more people over 65 and the generations that came after are not big enough to sustain that positive growth. Is this just a blip? The millennial generation, after all, is bigger than the baby boomers. Won't they make Social Security more robust? Or is it too late? Lawrence Kotlikoff is the William Warren Fairfield Professor of Economics at Boston University. He has written and co-written numerous books on Social Security and pioneered new ways of looking at federal debt. He's with us now. Lawrence, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
So I've got to start by asking, did you know that the University of Wisconsin has ties to the creation of Social Security?
No, I didn't know that. That's great.
Several alumni, Edwin Witt, Arthur Altmaier, and others had a hand in developing Social Security either as members of the Presidential Committee on Economic Security or through their research and through their ideas. So talk about when and why the U.S. implemented this system.
Well, it was the middle of the Great Depression, and you had lots and lots of older people who had very few resources. They lost jobs before they thought they would stop working, and they were starving, in poverty. Poverty rates for the elderly were extremely high, and they were viewed as a very vulnerable group that needed to be assisted. Also, you had the example of Germany and other European states going back decades who had started up state pensions. The first pension was set up by Bismarck, the Chancellor of Germany, back in the 1880s, I believe. So this was already a longstanding public policy that the U.S. had not yet adopted. And so it was felt this was a way to protect this from happening again, making sure that future generations of older people would not be living in poverty.
So now I have to ask this question. Are future generations of older people not living in poverty because of Social Security?
Future generations of older people right now are not experiencing poverty at the rates that was the case in the past. Their poverty rates, thanks to Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, are significantly lower than they were in the past and significantly lower than they are for younger people, including children right now. Mm. So we've been taking from, so we decided as a nation to finance the system by taking from young workers and giving to old retirees. And in the process, we have unfortunately left many young workers and their children actually at poverty or in poverty. So there's been an intergenerational transfer associated with this program. It wasn't really part of the original intention, as far as I know. Mm. I'm not sure that's what Roosevelt had in mind. But when they started implementing the program, we had a lot of workers relative to retirees because lifespan wasn't that long back then. And the money started coming in, and rather than shoring it up and investing it for the next generation, as they would do, as they did, for example, in Singapore, and as they're doing in Norway today with a major pension trust fund of $1 trillion for a small country, and as they're doing in other forward-thinking countries, what our country did is just take the money and spend it, hand it out in higher benefits to older people, and expand the coverage, expand the types of benefits over the years, and unfortunately take the money from younger people. So it became what we call a Ponzi scheme. Mm-hmm. This is not trying to be derogatory to Social Security. It's done enormous good, but it's done it in a very bad way, I think, to the point where we knew, I think, for the over the decades that we would run into financial trouble with this system. And the system right now is in dire financial shape.
Okay, so we are taking your calls. We're talking to Lawrence Kotlikoff about Social Security, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Lawrence, we've gotten, and can I call you Lawrence or Larry?
Larry's great.
Okay, great. You have a column that is Ask Larry, so that's why I asked you that. So, Larry, sure. We're talking about financing Social Security. You mentioned that other countries have trusts that they have set up to finance this kind of stuff. I remember Al Gore talking in 2000 about setting up the Social Security Trust Fund, not raiding the Social Security Trust Fund, putting a lockbox on the Social Security Trust Fund. Does this not exist here?
Well, we have a trust fund, but it's really trivially small. We have, hundreds of millions of dollars of liabilities. The trust fund is a couple trillion dollars. It's just trivial compared to the obligations that are not going to be covered by projected payroll taxes. If you go to the trustees report that came out in 2018, it's the 2018 Social Security Trustees Report. It's a summary of the system's finances. Now, there's a table, 6F1, buried way deep in the appendix of the report, which shows that the system is 32% underfinanced. It has a red ink to the tune of $34 trillion. That's right there in black and white, produced by our own actuaries. Mm-hmm. It says if you take all the projected benefit obligations to current retirees, to current workers, to future workers, out into the future, but you value them in the present. So it's not like you just add up dollars through the infinite horizon. You discount those dollars at a pretty high discount rate, so that you have a value in the present, because a dollar way out in the future is not the same as a dollar today, even ignoring inflation. Mm-hmm. So you get a value of, hey, if we had to pay this benefit, all these obligations off today, how much would it be? That's the benefit obligation. You subtract off the trust fund, which is one of the two assets you have to finance it, but then the other asset is future taxes, which have a present value. So you take the present value of the benefits, subtract the trust funds, subtract the present value of the taxes. You have a fiscal gap here for Social Security of $34 trillion. It's right in Table 6F1. It's buried in the appendix. The trustees, the so-called trustees, who are political appointees, don't even bother to mention the system's actual status, financial status. Now, that's 1.5 times U.S. GDP. U.S. GDP is about $20 trillion. We're talking about a $34 trillion amount of red ink.
Okay, so I have a question here, though. We talk about how long the Social Security Trust Fund is solvent, and I have seen different numbers. The last thing I saw was that it's solvent till 2035. So put this together, this $34 trillion that you're talking about and the solvency till 2035, how do these work together?
Well,
or do they not? Or am I misunderstanding this completely?
They don't work together. The numbers are totally misleading. They're focused on when the trust fund would run out of money, and at that point you'd have to cut benefits by about 25% from one day to the next. And the focus of these kinds of calculations that Social Security is making and talking about at the beginning of the trust fund report are all about the next 75 years at best. That's their focus.
Okay, we are going to talk about this in a moment. Lawrence Kotlikoff is a Social Security expert, and he's helping us celebrate and talk about the birthday of Social Security. We will be back in a moment. It's The Morning Show. The It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The birth of Social Security preceded by about a decade the beginnings of the baby boom generation. The baby boomers are now getting older. And who will pay for them and who will pay for the generations that are coming behind them? Larry Kotlikoff is a William Fairfield Warren professor and professor of economics at Boston University. And he's taking us through this. So, Professor Kotlikoff, when we left, we were talking about the trust fund, and when people say the trust fund is going to run out, you say it's going to run out sooner?
No, I'm saying that it's a ridiculous calculation of calculating when we're going to fall off the cliff and have no solution for falling off the cliff, and doing that calculation based on the assumption that the program and everybody will die after 75 years, and today's, and your grand, my grandkid, well, I don't have any grandkids yet, but good. I'm old enough to, that they're not going to be collecting any benefits. That's the underlying assumption. It's all myopic. We always keep looking short term with the system, and then we forget, we don't think, by systematically not looking long term, we miss the big picture. The big picture is, the system is broke today. It's not broken 25 years or 50 years or 75 years. It's broke right now. It's $34 trillion in the red. You put, you know, if you had to, let me put it this way. If you had to pay off everything that you owe to Social Security that you're not going to be able to cover with taxes, and you also use the trust fund to cover what you owe, you'd have to issue $34 trillion of official debt. So our official debt would go from $24 trillion to $54 trillion today. So if you want to think about the country, the system being in debt, just think about it as $34 trillion more of Treasury bills and Treasury bonds, Treasury IOUs. And they, of course, have to pay interest and principal has to be paid on them. In this case, its benefit payments have to be met. We don't have the wherewithal to cover those future benefit payments. We have 10,000 baby boomers retiring a day. Nobody... Even though I and others, other economists have been forecasting this disaster, and it's not just a disaster for Social Security, it's a disaster for our entire fiscal system, because the rest of the fiscal system, when you do the analysis on the same basis, the entire fiscal system is in far worse shape than Social Security. So it's not like some other part of the fiscal enterprise we've got going is going to bail out Social Security. The entire country has a fiscal gap, not of $34 trillion, but $196 trillion,
okay,
based on the Congressional Budget Office's projections. So the country's broke.
Okay, so we're going to stick with Social Security now because we could take way too long digging into these numbers. But one of the things that I'm interested in is this idea that there is a trust fund for Social Security that is separate from the federal budget, and that at one point I am told that the federal budget said, oh, no, we're going to use that money from the Social Security Trust Fund because we think it's just part of the general funds. Talk to me about that.
Well, you know, whether or not, think of it this way. You have $500,000 of student loans, and you have 15 cents in a bank account, and you spend all your time talking about whether that 15 cents is real or not, or whether it's really for covering your student loans or not. It's missing the picture. It's trivially small. It's not going to change anything. If we had the trust fund or didn't have the trust fund, if the trust fund was an asset, or just some accounting thing. Let's not call it an accounting trick. Let's just say it is an asset of Social Security. It's still, the system is still $34 trillion in the red right this minute. So it's a complete misnomer. The whole discussion of raiding the trust fund that Gore, whoever came up with, was off the boat. It was, you know, just not on focus. We have people running our economic system who are not trained economists. There's not a single PhD economist in all of Congress. 500 of these folks, 525, not a single economist. Of course, our president has no economic understanding whatsoever, as far as I can tell, or training. So you get, and then you've got sycophants who call themselves economists circling these people, telling them what they want to hear. So it's only occasionally that we hear from people like myself who are not connected with either of the parties, who actually do read the appendix of the trustees' report and see the system is going bad. I've been writing about this for really 40 years, about the impending clash of generations. I wrote a book called, with that title, co-authored book, wrote a book called The Coming Generational Storm. We saw this coming, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. We're in worse fiscal shape than any developed country scaled by our economy. We're in worse shape than Italy, than Belgium, than Greece, you name it, than Spain. If you put everything on the books, because those countries have dealt with, they have a lot more official debt, but they have the stuff that's off the books is much smaller in those countries. Italy's had four pension reforms. Can you remember a major Social Security reform since 1983 when we had a reform by Alan Greenspan, former chairman of the Council of the Federal Reserve? He got together with some politicians under the auspices of the president at the time, and President Reagan, and he came up with a fix, but it was all short-term thinking. It didn't look ahead long enough. He said, well, we'll fix it long enough for these politicians to say they've done their job and get reelected, and I can leave office with my head held high. And even though I know by projecting ahead that we will come to this point in 2018 when many of the problems that I can foresee now that I have ignored in my study and my solution, quote, solution, will be upon these people, and it's their problem to deal with.
I should note that Alan Greenspan left office at the financial crisis in 2007. I should also note that we have callers, and they're addressing some of the things that you're talking about. Mac from Sand Creek, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I really don't believe, I'm 21 years old, I really don't believe I'll ever see anything like Social Security, because, I mean, the only way we'll get it back to be fully funded is if we have as long and as dire as an economic downturn as we did when it was first implemented, because a lot of economics, like you say, that FDR saved capitalism because he implemented these safety nets, and I don't see it ever getting that bad again, so...
Okay. He doesn't see it ever getting that bad again. I'm hearing you, Lawrence, Larry, say that that's not true. It is going to get that bad again.
Well, financially, you know, I don't think our country's ever seen a fiscal problem like we have today. When you put everything together, not just Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, defense spending, and just the projection of taxes are not high enough to cover the. And we were running a $1 trillion official deficit this year when we had a tax cut when we should have had a major tax increase. Nobody discussed the long-term fiscal condition of the country, not the Republicans, not the Democrats, not in the election, not in the primaries. So, yeah, your generation is endangered. We have a policy, a systematic six-decade-long policy. It's called take as you go, take from young people, give to old people in a variety of ways, including cutting taxes temporarily so that old people can get off the hook and vote for the politicians. All the redistribution from the young to the old is going from young savers to old spenders. So our national saving rate's gone down. Our domestic investment rate's gone down from 15% down to around 3, 4, 4 or 5%. And that's why so many people are investing inside the U.S. from outside the U.S. because our country is not saving enough, and therefore we're not investing enough to cover all the investment opportunities in the U.S. And that's why we're running a trade deficit. It's because of our national saving rate. It's nothing to do with unfair trade practices. Not that there aren't some unfair trade practices by China and others that we need to address, but not, I don't think, through a trade war, but this stuff is all interconnected, and it's one of a piece. It's a systematic policy of expropriating your generation.
Another caller, Marie from Sheboygan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. What I want to say is I'm really glad that the education is available now. In my generation, we counted on Social Security. Newer generation. Being informed that they need to look at some other options. And everything that was discussed, you know, is kind of worth kind of talking about. But what I'm confused about is why in my 45 years of working that when I take the senators and the governors, the senators and the congressmen don't take tax cuts. If they did not make the billions of dollars a year that they make and take money from other people, the economy would be in excellent shape. It really goes back to the elected officials that are making way more money than what they should. And really, if they shut the government down, take the money away from Congress people, not the workers, not the secretaries, not the military, not the little person. Take it from those billionaires in Congress. That's my opinion. And it's never talked about on this station, so that's kind of disappointing, but that, be that as it may. Thank you for taking my
question. Thank you very much, Marie. We are talking about Social Security as we celebrate, maybe celebrate, talk about its 83rd birthday. It was set up in August 14th, 1935. We are going to be back in a moment with Lawrence Kotlikoff to talk about Social Security and how possibly we can sustain it. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Social Security turns 83 today, and there's a lot to talk about for its future health. We're looking at the history of the program and asking if it can survive another 83 years or even 20 with a Boston University economics professor, Lawrence Kotlikoff. He's written almost 20 books on economics, one with the intriguing title, Jimmy Stewart is Dead, which I fear might ruin my favorite movie for me. Larry, we are taking your calls with Larry Kotlikoff, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So I want to get back to this issue of just kind of fundamentally, who pays for Social Security now? It comes out of my paycheck and everybody else's paycheck, and also our employers match that, correct?
Well, that's another canard, because the employers are not our friends. They're not giving us money for free. They're not paying our taxes for us. If you go to your boss and say, please, you know, pay my taxes for the rest of my life, they're going to say, forget it. So what they're doing is they're sending in a check to the government. They're calling it the employer contribution, but they're really paying you less because of it. So it's really all coming out of your hide and every other worker's hide. And you're young, and other workers are young compared to the beneficiaries. So this has always been, it's been called a pay-as-you-go system, but it's really a take-as-you-go system. You take from young people and give to old people. And then you tell the young people, look, don't worry, when you're old, these benefits that we've promised you, which are even larger than what we've promised what we're giving your parents, we're going to have you take those, we're going to take those, the money from your kids. And so it's a Ponzi scheme. I'm not a right-wing Republican. I'm not a left-wing Democrat. I'm just a straight, narrow economist who's telling you the truth about the system.
Right.
This is what it's been and is. It's an ongoing Ponzi scheme.
Okay, but
I don't want to make. I want to be clear that I'm not trying to bash Social Security in this conversation, because Social Security's done enormous good. We need to have a modern Social Security system that's not going to drive our kids broke. We need to have social insurance. We need to have health care for all and all the other social insurance programs, but we need to have them done right. So that's a very different position from where the Republican Party is coming from, which is just take all the stuff down and let people fend for themselves. That's not my view at all. People will go, will starve if that will get back into the 30s, and people will be starving. They will not save enough for themselves. So we need to modernize Social Security. I've written about that.
Okay, so I'm going to get to that in a second. I just want to ask one more question about this Ponzi scheme that you talk about. If the generation coming up is financing the generation that is retired, essentially, and we've got a huge generation of millennials, larger than actually the baby boom generation, won't they then make enough money to be able to finance the generations in front of them?
No, because the ratio of old people to workers is going up, even though the absolute number of millennials in the workforce is going to be, is the absolute number of those people are larger than the absolute number of baby boomers. The baby boomers did not have that many kids. They only had roughly two kids on average rather than three kids on average, which was the case for the parents of the baby boom generation. And then in addition, the millennials as a group, their wages have not been rising in real terms rapidly. You know, we have this expansion right now going on in the economy, but if you look at the data, real wages over the last year haven't gone up at all. The real wage growth has been zero. Nominal wages have gone up 2.8%. Inflation's gone up 2.8%. No real wage growth in the middle of this economic boom that the Republicans are touting. So the unemployment's down, but real wages are not rising. If you don't have real wage growth, you don't have that headwind to help pay for these. You don't generate higher and higher taxes each year to pay for this bigger and bigger cohort of retirees. So that's part of why the system is broke. It's the demographics are not helping, but it's also the economics. The real wage growth has slowed down dramatically. Real weekly wages in our country are not a lot higher than they were back in 1965.
Right.
If you don't trust me on that, just go look at the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, data on average real weekly wages. You'll see that that's the case. So our country is not only broke, but the way we've gone broke has been damaging the economy. It's been damaging our investment. It's and we're becoming relatively poor, and we're declining as an economic power because of the policies we've been undertaking. It's all consumption-oriented. It's not saving and investment-oriented, which is exactly what's going on in China and Singapore and Malaysia and all the countries that have been participating in the Southeast Asia miracle, Korea. All those countries, they earn extra money. They don't go and spend it on iPhones. They invest it in factories to build iPhones.
Ah, that's an interesting point, especially for Wisconsin. We are taking some calls here. Jim from Dubuque, welcome to the program.
Good morning. We have in this country an economy which depends on exponentially increasing debt. We have a debt which can't be paid, so it, by definition, will be defaulted on. There's two ways to default. You can default honestly or dishonestly. Defaulting honestly would mean to say that there's no more Medicare, no more Social Security, no more military, no more nothing. To default dishonestly is the way countries in our situation generally do, and they hyperinflate the currency. So people may get their Social Security check, but it won't buy them a loaf of bread.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. I want to talk to you, Lawrence, about that. Do you want to answer him?
Sure. That's my view, too, that the easiest thing for politicians to do is put pressure on the central bank to print money. And you see this today in front of our eyes in Venezuela. The country is unable to borrow money through the financial market, so they're just printing money and running a hyperinflation. We had 22 hyperinflations in the last century, so that's going to be the first path to take. And I don't think that, you know, Social Security benefits are indexed to inflation, but the indexation will occur once a year if prices are going up 50% a month. If we get to that point, the indexation will never keep up with the inflation. So that's and then there's other aspects of the tax system which are not inflation indexed. So this is ways the country's politicians try and use inflation to get more real revenues and cut real spending without actually making it public. It's not an answer. What we need to do is freeze the Social Security system in place, pay off what we owe. And to do that, it's very simple. We just, from the day of the reform, let's say it's January 1st of 2019, we tell everybody that, look, you're going to get zeros put into your earnings records from this date forward. So you're going to collect when you retire all your accrued pension, Social Security benefits. We're going to pay you off every penny that we owe under the existing system. And we're going to pay current retirees every penny that's owed to them. But we're going to force everybody who's working to contribute 10% into a what I call a personal security account. Now, listen to me, because this is not a George W. Bush proposal. This is which involved using Wall Street to rip us off. This is a proposal for putting all the money, each of us contribute, each of us have an account, but all the money is pooled together and invested in a global financial security. It's invested in the global financial market in an index fund. So it's all done by computer so that our money would be invested in stocks and bonds and real estate, securities, government bonds, corporate bonds throughout the world in the, you know, wherever, the, in all the advanced financial markets. And this is exactly what the people in the in Singapore have done. But we'd each have our own account, but we'd all get the same rate of return, and Wall Street would get not a penny. This could all be run by my laptop. Literally, a single laptop could run the entire system. And then at retirement age, you get your money out, adjusted for inflation, but in the form of a pension that continues until you die.
Okay, so here's my question, though. Yeah. What if the world finances collapse?
Well, if that's a very good question. And the proposal, which is at purpleplans.org, purpleplans.org, if you look at the actual, want to see the details of the proposal, the proposal includes a government guarantee of a zero real return, that if the world financial system does not generate at least give you back at least what you put in adjusted for inflation, the government would make up the difference. That's a very modest guarantee. But if we're in that situation where the world financial system collapses, we're probably in world war, and we've got more problems than Social Security. So, no, I think this is a reasonable solution. It's, and also, by the way, I would make the contributions be divided between husband and wife and or legal partners. I would make have the government make matching contributions on behalf of the poor. That's a part of the Clinton-Gore proposal for fixing Social Security. They had a proposal themselves. I would also make payments, have the government make payments on behalf of the unemployed, the disabled. So this would be a highly progressive system, just like the current system. And so we can have progressivity, we can have fairness, we can also have full funding, because this would be a fully funded system, and we can gradually over time get out from under work off this $34 trillion unfunded liability and ensure that our future kids actually have an old age pension system that's not bankrupt.
There's
a way out. It's not painless, but there is a solution.
How many years do you think it'll take?
We're talking about really a decades-long transition, but it would start tomorrow. So if I were president, I would set this up, you know, with the consent of Congress the next day.
Consent of Congress is the issue here. We're going to talk about that in a moment. Larry Kotlikoff is a Social Security expert from Boston University. He has written over 20 books on Social Security. And we are taking your calls, and we'll be back with him to talk about the future of Social Security on its birthday today. It's The Morning Show.
We'll start out with patchy fog across the state. Muggy conditions, an approaching front later on today brings widely scattered showers and thunderstorms in western and northern areas that will last into the afternoon and evening. Highs in the upper 70s to the upper 80s. On Wednesday, cloudy to partly sunny, a chance for scattered showers and thunderstorms across the state, especially in the south, highs in the lower 70s to the mid 80s.
Coming up at 8, we'll talk to Reed Magny of the Wisconsin Elections Commission for some last-minute tips as you go out to vote in today's primaries. That's in about 12 minutes on The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. When we talk about the future of Social Security, we're really talking about what kind of country we want to live in and how we want to treat our elderly. That makes the 83rd birthday of the program an opportunity to explore this relationship between the worker and the state and workers to the people who are retired. Lawrence Kotlikoff is the perfect scholar to explore this with. He is the William Warren Fairfield Professor of Economics at Boston University. He's the expert on Social Security. And we are taking your calls here, 800-642-1234. Larry, I want to get to this politically viable part of it. You've told us how you would fix Social Security. If you were president with the help of Congress, you said you would do this. I'm wondering if you think that the help of Congress would actually be forthcoming.
Well, I think if you explain to older people that that they've been conned over the years, and middle-aged people, that we are expropriating our children, that we have an enormous $196 trillion fiscal gap, that the country's got not $20 trillion in debt, but really $196 trillion in debt, and that we're broke. And we need to do things to make sure that we don't have our kids facing sky-high tax rates far beyond anything that we have experienced over our life. We need to have generational equity going forward. So we need to work this out collectively without pulling the rug out from anybody, including the current elderly, so that we need to have, in effect, reform of Social Security, reform of our health care system, so everybody gets a health care plan, but it doesn't drive the country broke. There are solutions. The purpleplans.org will provide a set of solutions that economists have agreed on for how to fix many of our social institutions, our economic institutions, including Social Security. So I think if I were elected president, I'm not saying I'm running right now, but if that were the case, politicians would realize something has changed. If we get a third party candidate elected, if we get somebody from either side, either party, who's really going to talk about the truth of what's going on in this country, and that we are really bankrupt, and we see it in not being able to fix the infrastructure, not being able to afford a wall, whether or not you think a wall is appropriate, we can't afford a wall, mm-hmm. apparently. We can't afford to fund the National Science Foundation. We can't afford to fund the National Endowments of the Arts or NPR properly. We can't afford a lot of things because we are bankrupt. We see that signs of it all the time, all around. So it's just we haven't acknowledged that. So when you are in a bad hole, you have to, first of all, tell the truth about it, and then you dig yourself out, and that's what Americans do. But we can't do it with these politicians because right now they're into lying full time. That's their main job, just lying.
Yeah, see, that's my question, actually, though. Do Americans really want the truth?
I think ultimately we have to hope that older people will realize that their kids are the most precious thing in their lives, and that their friends' kids and their neighbors' kids and that other Americans' kids are really their kids. So we have to understand that we're in this together. Wisconsin is a very homogeneous place. A lot of the white people in Wisconsin probably don't see the black 5-year-olds in Detroit as being their children. But guess what? They are their children because their own children are going to be having to work with these other people, these other kids, and collectively they're going to have to pay your old age benefits. So we need to understand we're in this together, and we have to work as a cohesive society and understand that everybody's kids are our kids, and we have to worry about their welfare, not just our own welfare. So we have to move from this very selfish, generationally focused focus to the welfare of everybody and have generational equity, which we don't have right now.
We are taking
one other.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I wanted to say one other very important reason for reforming Social Security. Even if it was completely solvent, it's completely unworkable as a system. Over all the years that Social Security has been in existence, we've added more and more benefits and more crazy rules relating to those benefits. So we now have in Social Security probably the world's most complex bureaucratic program ever devised by man. There's hundreds of thousands of rules. If you go to the program operating manual system of the Social Security system, you'll start clicking around on the rules, which link to other rules, which link to yet other rules.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a million rules. They don't actually count these rules because they're all hyperlinked. You can't figure out the number of rules. But I've written a book called Get What's Yours with co-authors, how to max out your Social Security benefits. Became a New York Times bestseller because nobody had really clearly explained the rules to the system. I also have, through my software company, a program called MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com, which helps people figure out how to get the most out of the system, because nobody can possibly figure out all these rules on their own. You need to have advanced software. So that's a very inexpensive program as a tool there. As long as we keep Social Security in place, we need to have people like me helping people out there who to get the most from the system, because they certainly contributed to the system, even if they may not have contributed enough to cover all their benefits.
Right. We're taking some phone calls here. John from Milwaukee, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I'd like to ask Lawrence a question. I liked his global index, although I don't understand it fully. I've written people in politics, and my thought on a much less educated level is that if we tied Social Security to our home mortgages, we would give an interest rate that's substantial to Social Security to fund it. So by bypassing Fannie Mae or Fannie Mac, any mortgage that is written, you know, right now 4% or 4.25%, would be paid back to Social Security based upon your home purchase. When I had a home purchase in the 70s and it was 10%, that would have been all going into Social Security. And I'm just curious to hear from Lawrence if that's a viable idea. I know there'd be a ton of political pressure to eliminate Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae.
But as a country...
Thank you very much for that question.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is kind of very connected to my proposal, which also, by the way, is endorsed by hundreds of economists and Nobel laureates. So it's not just that I have these ideas. I've been talking to economists. You'll see at purpleplans.org, but many of these proposals have been endorsed by lots and lots of extremely well-placed economists or reputable economists. So the idea of paying off the old system with payroll taxes, not accruing extra benefits, but then forcing people to contribute 10%, dividing the contributions between husband and wife, making progressive contributions on behalf of the poor and the unemployed, the disabled, and then investing in a global index. Well, that global index is going to be investing in mortgages around the world, not just in the U.S., not just in Wisconsin. It's going to be investing in government bonds, in corporate bonds. It's going to be investing in stocks of all the major companies and all the listed companies and all the major exchanges. It's going to be invested in real estate trusts. It's going to be fully divested around the world. It's going to get the world rate of return, which has historically been high and positive. And it's also going to come with a guarantee. And then a computer can do the entire thing without any cost, investment cost. Wall Street plays not earns not a single dollar. And the payout can also be run by the same laptop computer. So I have this vision of clearing out an entire floor of the Health and Human Services building, which is a massive building, and having my Air laptop, an Apple laptop, not to plug Apple, but it's a very thin laptop, being suspended by invisible wires, nearly invisible wires, and running the entire Social Security system because it's that simple to run it. So we do have solutions. We need to go to the experts at this point, which are the economists, figure out how to fix our healthcare system. We can have universal health insurance for all without going broke and while still maintaining private provision and competition. There are answers. We just need to get economists really helping to run the show here.
Larry Kotlikoff is one of those economists that has been talking about Social Security and written about Social Security. He is an economics professor at Boston University, and he's taken us through the issues with the Social Security system, which turns 83 today. Larry, thank you for joining us.
Anytime. My real pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.